Hey, Vink.
Hey, long time. Well, hey, no, actually, we did one just last week, but
yeah.
I don't know. It's really hard to keep track of time. I know we're always time shifting these things, and
that's true.
So, are we biweekly now? Is that where we are?
Officially biweekly now, at least for a while, at least until we get some projects out of the way.
Oh, well, that makes sense. We need to get some more videos out there. So
yeah.
So Sean, I guess I haven't heard from you in 2 weeks.
Right on.
How are things?
Things are good. Do you know how hard it is to find a copy of Star Fox?
Not hard at all.
That's what I would have thought, but like every game store in Madison seems to be lacking a copy. I left town even and couldn't find anything. And of course, this is one of those games you can't really find on a virtual console because it uses the Super FX chip.
Really? They don't have Star Fox on virtual console?
I don't think so. I should probably check that before I make such grandiose claims.
Sean was wrong.
Right? But I did pick up some other games. Golf.
you didn't have golf previously?
I had golf and Gyromite. I'm looking for
that
something.
That must have set you back 17, 18 cents.
Yeah, right. And then, but I also picked up... Actually, I'm almost kind of ashamed to say it.
What'd you get?
Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Why? That's got to be like the third worst game ever made.
Well, that's precisely why. Is because for that particular video, the our 3D special, for those who are wondering, for a couple of games, I had to use some stills because I either didn't have the games or the ones I had didn't work. I actually have 3 copies of The Immortal now. One that I picked up for way too much money, and then 2 for like $3 a piece. And all of them had the same problem where like the screen jumps. And the one I had worked fine until I pulled it out without turning the power off, and I think that just fried it or something.
Ooh.
This is one of those games that has like a battery backup inside of it, so if that battery is on the fritz, it probably just doesn't work right. So I want to open up and see if I can replace the battery or something. But
for
I have 3 copies.
For some reason, I remember The Immortal having some password protection thing.
Yeah.
No?
Well, I couldn't tell you because I can't get them to play properly, but they don't work on my NES or on my top loader, so I gotta figure out what to do there. But yeah, 3 copies, they all behave the same way. So that and Bill and Ted were the two we had to do stills of, and if we ever do an updated version for, you know, some reason, I would like to get actual game footage.
Yeah, well, I mean, and you should.
But I'm also...
Get some from the Apple IIgs version, too, actually. It looked much better.
How would really I... Good emulation, I guess. I don't have Apple IIgs or the game.
Well, if you can get to my home, my Apple IIgs is still in working condition.
You know, I'm up in that neck of the woods a lot. I might as well just see if your parents will let me have it.
Yeah, I bet they would, and... The games on, yes, I put a hard drive on my Apple IIgs.
I think I have a Jumpman disc laying around somewhere. Hopefully 5.25-inch floppies keep pretty well after 30 years. maybe not. But I picked up Bill and Ted's Adventure because I was looking for Star Fox. I actually saw the Game Boy version, which I'm sure was terrible, in a display case. And then I was like, I wonder, and I went over to the NES section, and sure enough, they had a copy.
I hear the Atari Lynx one wasn't quite as bad.
Was there really?
Oh, yes, dear. Yes, there was an Atari Lynx one. And there was a PC adventure game that it was actually pretty fun.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It had like voice clips in it. It was weird.
Really?
Yeah, and like pretty low quality because it was a floppy disk game, but it would be like something strange is afoot at the Circle K or something.
Nice.
Something like that. But you went through time and like you had to like find like Nero's violin so he could play it while his city was burning, or I don't remember.
Wow.
I remember that it was probably one of the easiest adventure games I've ever played.
Mm.
Like you know, you traveled through time in it, but it was not hard. Like every object was really obvious. Like usually in point and click games you gotta like look at everything, but like, hey, let's see. I'm in cowboy times. There's a violin sitting here. I wonder if that's the violin I'm looking for.
Right. Yeah.
It was fun.
The NES one wasn't so fun, as I recall. Nope. For those who don't know, and the reason it was included as an example in our 3D special was it was one of the games that had isometric 3D. Did we even mention Snake Rattle and Roll? Because that was one of them, but I don't think we mentioned it on camera.
I don't think we mentioned it. Oh, yeah. Man.
I picked
that
up, too. Oh, that is so hard. But I think that's part of the problem is, like, you had the, like, the up, down, left, right on the pad, but then because everything's, like, kind of turned three quarters, you know, you have to, like, match, you have to, like, use the diagonals on the control pad, too, sometimes. Yeah. Or I think in the case of Bill and Ted, it didn't shift the controls, so it was impossible to navigate. I think that's right. I'm going to have to try it again. I just picked it up today. I haven't had a chance to put it in yet. But I don't remember much about it from when I played it, except for I needed some kind of hint guide. Because it didn't make any sense. And then every time you succeeded in a particular mission, you'd like play you'd play a concert, and like your like score and your popularity would go up every time if you succeeded.
Really?
Well. Yeah, and it's like the same kind of thing over and over again. Like every level was very samey, as I recall, and just not fun.
That reminds me of another time-traveling game.
Oh, what's that?
Back to the Future.
Okay, I don't. Does that even count? We're talking about the NES ones, right?
Yeah, where you're, you know, you're going through a auto-scrolling game, avoiding panes of glass, throwing bowling balls, and collecting clocks, just like the movie.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
At the end of every five levels, they put in some fairly impossible mini game that, and of course, no save and no ability to continue. So
I don't. Who made that game again?
I'm thinking in my mind Acclaim, because it was terrible, but it was a movie licensed terrible game, so it might have been THQ. I think it was Acclaim, though.
Oh dear, I'm looking this up right now. I asked because I'm wondering if the company who made Bill and Ted is also the same one.
I would doubt it.
Right. But it's funny you should mention that, because that game, like, even though it was based on a time travel movie, didn't have any time travel in it, but you know what game did?
What game?
Back to the Future Part 2 and 3.
I think I've mentioned how disappointed I was with Back to the Future 2 and 3, in the fact that it was really just Back to the Future 2.
Yeah. Oh, it's the exact same company.
It's all Acclaim?
LJN Toys.
LJN? Oh my gosh, I totally forgot about them. Yeah, they were. Oh, I'm. If anybody can think of a good game that they ever made, please write in and tell me, because that company pretty much became synonymous with terrible, terrible, terrible game. You know, they were around till the Dreamcast days.
How?
I don't know. The last game they made was called like Spirit of Speed, 1939 or 1920 something. It was like a. It was a racing game where you played like in old jalopies or something, and it had a really cool concept, but oh, was it terrible.
Oh man. We're going to have to, this reminds me of Magfest. The angry video game nerd James Rolfe had some poor kid play Back to the Future 3 Genesis game.
Okay.
I think I mentioned this during the Magfest episode, so I don't want to rehash it, but it was just so, like, that went on for way too long. Like, the kid wasn't getting it, and then the crowd went from encouraging to heckling after not too long, and he still didn't stop it. So.
No, I didn't hear about that.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe I decided I wasn't going to mention it, but yeah, I left after that. I was like, okay, this is balls. I'd rather suck in a suspended. Never mind. Anyway.
No, don't.
But Back to the Future Part 2 was interesting. I'm sorry. I can't believe I just said those words in sequence.
Try again.
It had an interesting idea that wasn't well executed because the entire game wasn't well executed.
Was the interesting idea the movie that was quite good?
Yeah. No. It was, you had the three time zones. So you had 1955, 1985, alternate 1985, I should say.
Okay.
And 2015, which we're just 2 years off from. So I'm waiting for my hoverboards and lace-up sneakers and soft drying jackets there. Mattel and other companies. But you had those three time zones, and there were, the only thing you could really do that would affect one versus the other was you could like plant like a seed in the distant past, and then, like, you know, 60 years hence, you'd have a giant tree you could use to jump up to get some puzzle. So it was,
well, that's kind of cool,
right? It was
actually.
It was a really cool idea that was used for such a stupid platforming purpose, and yeah. And I actually, what kind of reminded me of that was I was playing the cave, and there's something similar. If you play as a time traveler, the game has for each character you play out of the people in your party that you choose has a level specific to those characters, and I was playing the cave, and the time travelers was so that was fun. That kind of got me thinking about the whole thing, and it made me realize though that a lot of video games just disappoint me in this area, where there are these interesting time travel mechanics that they sort of hint at, or I feel like could have been explored more. I basically just want to see a game that takes that idea and makes a whole game out of it, like the consequences of what you do in the past affecting the future, butterfly effect kind of thing.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
That would be so cool.
So time travel then? We're doing time travel today?
I think time travel in video games.
Well, I like what you're saying, but a game like that, I think, especially in the retro era, I mean, that would have been really, really hard to do.
Oh, I agree, but I think some games, and the reason why it bothers me so much is because it's like they get so close sometimes and just don't do anything with it.
Give me an example of a game that got close, and I'll give you an example of a game that didn't get close at all.
Okay. another game that I can think of is Fable 2, which didn't really involve time travel per se, except for that, you know, you had this part where you played as a kid and this part where you played as an adult. And apparently there are some choices you can make as a child. Not really choices, but like how well you complete a certain task determines how, like, a part of town might turn out. Like, if you're a moral person, then... there are three time zones in that one, too. 10 years pass... while you're an adult as well, and I don't want to spoil why that is, but again, you know, so like when you're a kid, this is part of Old Town in the capital, depending on like what decisions you make as a kid and completing these quests and doing the right thing, like turning in some papers to a police officer versus some lecherous guy who wants them instead, determines whether or not, like, it's like a nice rustic neighborhood when you're an adult, or if it's like this like den of scum and villainy. It doesn't make a big difference in the game itself, but it you know, you do have some kind of impact in the game world. And then similarly, there's like this whole coast town where you can make similar choices, but, you know, because you're an adult, you can make a lot worse choices, and that also affects the game. And they're interesting ideas, but there's like no consequence. They're not part of the main story, and they don't carry over to Fable 3, I don't think, which takes place in the same settings generally.
Interesting. But you didn't really like how that one turned out, though.
Well, no, it just kind of like teased the edge of what I'm looking for. Like, it was an interesting idea, but I didn't even know that it was possible until I actually started reading more about the game, and that I didn't understand that my choices had those kinds of consequences. So I started up a different character and played her a lot more evilly, And sure enough, that did make a difference in the child's way of doing things. Yeah, so I was able to confirm it, but it's like, it wasn't obvious. Like, I want a game that makes it like front and center obvious what you're doing, and then sort of takes you through the consequences and lets you possibly undo them if the game story allows it, kind of thing.
All right, I'm going to give you a bad example.
Oh dear.
When I first heard time travel, I thought of one of the most disappointing games that I've ever played in my entire life.
Okay.
And I don't know if it, you know, I'd have to look back on it right now and to see if it was incredibly disappointing because it really was a bad game, or if it was just disappointing because of what I thought it was going to be.
Oh dear.
The game is we're bringing Rare back into it again.
All right.
The game is Rare's game Time Lord.
You know, I've seen copies of that everywhere, and I've always been curious because whenever, you know, being a Doctor Who fan from really little, before the NES even came out, I was like, oh, Time Lord, but, like, you know, exactly. I would look at it, it's like, it can't be Doctor Who related, so I've never actually played it.
It's not that game. I mean, the cover art should have given it away enough, but I'm like, Time Lord, Doctor Who. Doctor Who's a Time Lord. This is a Doctor Who video game. 10 seconds later. This is not a Doctor Who video game.
Right.
It was out when I was 9. So, I mean, I should have known better even then. But it's a game where you get to, like, punch cowboys. I don't know. It's a side scroller and you punch stuff as a time travel mechanic, it's nothing. It's you just basically play through different time zones. One interesting thing is there's a counter at the bottom you're moving through time. It's going to be like every 4 seconds is one human year or something.
Interesting.
So like as like you start off in the future and as time ticks down, you can start moving into the past.
Huh.
It's kind of neat. Like as a mechanic, like, oh wow, years are going by, but like it doesn't really make any sense, and it doesn't really make the game any fun. But it was kind of a neat idea. Well, hold on, what would be like the most famous time traveling game of the modern era? What about Sands of Time?
Right. Yeah. See, I mean, if you want to go that way with it, we can talk about the games like Braid,
I want to talk about Braid.
Yeah.
But Braid's kind of like I wouldn't consider it a time travel game. I consider it like a time stop, time reverse game. But you don't really.
Yeah, you play with time, but you don't like explore the consequences of time travel itself. Yeah. Right. Right. Well, Sands of Time is kind of the same way. Right.
But kind of, I mean, you play with time travel to set things up for, but yeah, I guess it's not really.
Well, so here's the thing with the Sands of Time trilogy, is that the first game, I don't want to spoil the ending for people because the story I feel is just so tight for like a video game in general, and it's just so fun, but it does sort of explore some interesting time travel ideas, but not like directly, because it's part of the story that you can't change.
Don't spoil it. I haven't seen the Disney movie yet.
Oh, well, the Disney movie is like based on the trilogy as a whole, kind of.
Oh.
But like, you know, the first game definitely deals with, you wouldn't be able to progress unless you're able to run time back and fix your mistakes kind of thing. The second game is the story is really kind of awful, but I mean, the mechanics are a bit better, I think, but, the plot is that you go to this island of time where the Empress of Time controls the Sands of Time. And I'm just like, oh, of time. you're kind of going there just to kill her. That's like your mission, right? Because it'll like the future didn't unravel the way you wanted to or something, and now you gotta undo it all by embarking on this quest. It just feels so stupid. But I guess if you do things in a certain way, then you end up sparing her, and that wasn't the ending I got. And but that's how the third game starts, regardless of what you do.
Okay.
So, and then that game, you know what? I played it and I liked it a lot more than the second one, but I can't remember a darn thing about it. it was kind of a prototype for Assassin's Creed, the whole stealth killing thing that they introduced into it. But yeah, that trilogy as a whole informs the plot of the movie, which is like all of those things and none of them at the same time.
Well, you know what? I have a copy of Prince of Persia: Sands of Time that is on my pile of shame right now. Is that one I should promote?
Oh, absolutely! That is an excellent, excellent game.
Maybe I'll have to then. What is it? I have Warrior Within and Sands of Time, both pretty much unplayed.
Play Sands of Time first, obviously, and then if you can get past the boss battle that happens right at the beginning of Warrior Within, let me know what you think of it.
Okay. But didn't they just like remake Prince of Persia like again?
No, there was another, you know, self-titled, you know, no subtitle version with the Prince and Elika. They actually riff on the original game a lot.
Okay.
Sort of indirectly. But that's like, you can't die in that game kind of thing. Elika always saves you.
Really?
Yeah.
So is it like more of an adventure game then, or?
No, it's the exact same mechanics.
Okay.
The exact same platforming mechanics anyway. Although really the only way to travel, you have this whole world to travel across, but the only way you can do it is you know, through acrobatic leaping and jumping. And it's actually a pretty fun game, and I do like the story overall, and the way it ends is pretty cool, I think. It didn't get a lot of love from the fans, and they just ditched the whole thing altogether, and you know, been doing six Assassin's Creed games in six years instead. So,
okay.
Which also involves time travel in some respect, sort of, I should mention.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, when we're using just games that involve some time travel, well, let me tell you about a game that I did beat that involves time travel.
Okay.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Turtles in Time.
Oh, come on.
What a great game.
Oh, jeez.
Come on, that's a great game.
It is a great game.
There's cowboys and there's ninjas and there's... Yeah, the time traveling was just a way to recycle sprites, wasn't it?
Did you ever read the graphic novel? It had not Usagi Yojimbo. Who's that pig guy?
I don't recall.
It was kind of a crossover. But like, you know, they find like this artifact, takes them back to like feudal era Japan, and they got to use their ninja skills to save the day. Very, very loosely the basis for the third movie. So I was really excited to see that third movie, but it ended up being so awful.
I remember only one thing from that entire movie. Mm. I remember that at one point, one of the turtles, I think, says something like, "Lend me your ears," and ears are thrown at him. Did that really happen? Like, that might have only happened in my mind.
No, that sounds familiar.
Because
Wait, was that Turtles or was that some other movie?
It was Turtles. It must have been Turtles.
I don't know.
Because I remember I was watching, and I was a pretty big Turtles fan. I saw both of the first two movies in the theater.
Right.
By the way, Mom and Dad, if you're listening, I'm so sorry.
The first one's a good movie. The second one...
The second one had the ooze, and it was...
And Super Shredder.
You're right. But the first one had that line in, "No, those are mine. I'm just doing a little chucking or something."
Oh, jeez.
April O'Neil, yeah.
Oh, yeah, they changed April's, which is the first thing that turned me off to that movie.
Yeah?
I don't know why Judith Hegg. Hegg? Hey? Whatever. I don't know why she didn't reprise her role. Maybe she read the script and was like, no.
Well, I mean, she already kind of killed her career with the first one.
Oh, no, she was in a more or less prominent recurring role in Big Love.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah.
Yeah, but it was pretty much dead by then. It's true.
But, I mean, that was years and years later.
The only person who's like the same from movie to movie is Casey Jones, I just realized.
Wow.
Like the turtles, like all the puppets change, all the voice actors change.
Yeah,
it's just Casey,
huh?
Who in the third movie just ends up babysitting because they had to body swap, not body swap, but everyone who traveled to the past, someone else had to go into the future, and so like all these Japanese guys were in the sewers being babysat by Casey Jones doing really? Slapstick. It was awful.
I cannot remember anything from the third movie. I think I just had it's all in the fog of war, you know.
The movie ended with that song, that oh. You don't remember that? Oh.
Oh no, wasn't it the oh.
That's what I did. No? That's what I was singing.
Oh, you didn't do that.
I was in a different key.
You should have said with the song they used in the mouthwash ad.
Yeah, the mouthwash ad. That's actually how I knew the song already, was the mouthwash ad.
The mouthwash ad.
Anyone else who lived through the early 90s knows what we're talking about.
Yeah. There's people right now that they're like, Okay, I don't know what I'm turning this podcast off.
Okay,
Connor, talking about. Let me do a Google search for
It's like what's the next name of like Jungle Life, Jungle Boy? I don't know.
Boy, maybe
Tarzan Boy, something. Anyway,
sounds like it might be a thing. Okay,
maybe.
Mario's Time Machine.
Well, we should quickly plug that we were in Juario's Stuck in Your Head Ninja Turtles video, which is pretty awesome.
You were in it. I wasn't in it.
Oh, that's right. Well, we have our own version, too, which has Vink in it.
And Vink's wife.
Where he explains to her what the Ninja Turtles were, since they didn't really have them in Japan except for that anime follow-up.
You know, actually, I found out that like the turtles actually were kind of a thing. I mean, definitely not as big as in America, but
right.
They had that anime style. But the video games itself, I mean, they were Konami games, and they're pretty easy to find. They must have sold relatively well.
Maybe. I mean, I wouldn't know.
But yeah, watch that video.
Yeah, both of them.
Okay, so how about Mario's Time Machine?
That one I haven't played.
It was by Software Toolworks. Man, you know, a lot of people have been complaining recently about how other companies have been kind of borrowing the Nintendo properties and how that was weird. But Nintendo's been doing it since the NES days.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, there was like Mario Teaches Typing, which was outsourced to Interplay.
Oh.
And there's Mario is Missing and Mario's Time Machine, which were both Software Toolworks.
Okay.
And it was kind of a, I don't know, edutainment game.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, how about Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego?
Again, I'm not sure if I played that one or not.
Really? You were an Apple II kid, weren't you? Or was that?
I was, but after a certain point, the NES kind of took over.
Well, it was on the NES as well. It was you could always recognize it as in the game stores because it's the one that came in the huge box because it came with like that book.
Oh, okay.
Like what type of book was it? Like the where in where in the world is Carmen Sandiego? I don't think that ever got an NES port. I think Where in Time was actually the only one that came to the NES.
Oh, okay.
But like the Where in the World ones came with, but I don't know, it came with some kind of like desk encyclopedia or something.
Wow.
Because during certain parts of it, you had to actually use this guidebook to like look through this thing and find out information. Actually, all the Carmen Sandiego games had you do that at some point.
Okay. Well, is it like a copy protection thing?
I think it possibly was copy protection for the PC versions, but right. I mean, there's no reason why they would have needed to do copy protection on the NES. I think it was just one of the features was like parents would like see their kid like paging through this desk reference, like, my kid's learning through the television.
Oh, dear.
Impersonation of every parent in the
Okay. You know, I feel like I'm remiss in mentioning this for so long, but the Zelda series in general is pretty good with time travel. Like it's a feature, but again, I think this is kind of what fed into my perception that it's not really being handled well enough, because I'm playing Skyward Sword and there's a time travel element in it, sort of. Well, there's like a whole section of the world where you have this like little bubbles of time, like past time around by hitting these time shift stones, which is a really cool mechanic. And that gets played out in really fun ways. But there's this other thing that happens later on. Well, let's just say there was something I noticed in the world that I figured was going to be involve time travel at some point, and it doesn't pan out in the way I was hoping. But I haven't finished the game yet, so that remains to be seen if I know what I'm talking about. But then I had to think back, you know. Well, then there's I was going to call it Zelda 64, Ocarina of Time.
Ocarina of Time. Okay.
Involves, you know, like young Link, old Link, you know, there's not a lot of shifting between those two time periods. Like you go between them, but then not a lot happens except for that sand temple. Oh, wow. That desert in Skyward Sword, that's also where time travel happens. Is that a coincidence? I don't know.
Oh, and desert has sand. And it's Prince of Persia, the Sands of Time.
I think we figured this out.
We're making the connections right now.
Oh, goodness. But then there was also an entire game, Oracle of Ages, around time travel, essentially.
Yeah.
But I don't remember a darn thing about that game. Honestly.
You know, the type of time travel that I like in 8-bit and 16-bit games, the kind that is totally unnecessary.
Like?
Okay, have you ever played, it's a Neo Geo game, and I don't think it was ever reviewed super great, but it's one of my favorite Neo Geo games of all time. It's called Ninja Commando. Okay, you're a ninja, but it's basically a top-down shooter. I mean, there's no real, like, ninja-ing at all. You're basically just, like, shooting bullets, which are either, like, throwing stars or, like, you know, those ninja knives or things. But basically, you're, like, ninjas traveling through time and, like, shooting dinosaurs and, like, cowboys and stuff.
Wow.
And almost everything explodes for no real reason. It's a wonderful, wonderful top-down, like, scrolling shooter. It's kind of like Ikari Warriors. I don't think it wasn't made by SNK. It was made by ADK, but I mean, they're basically the same type of thing. No, you should try it.
Okay.
I think this one is included on one of the Wii collections. I'm not sure.
Really?
I had it on Neo Geo CD. And it didn't have a long loading time, so it was probably actually a pretty small game.
Oh, dear.
I think one of the Wii collections may have had it. Either that or Virtual Console. But yeah, you should try it just because it's not an awesome game. It's an awesome game.
Oh dear.
Like, it's not a great game. Is it like an awesome game?
is it like Cho Aniki awesome?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's way less gay. But
there's nothing wrong with that.
No, there's nothing.
Because I have that and Cho Aniki.
I was playing. Let's see. What was it? I think it was my brother's birthday, and I gave him a Super Famicom.
Nice.
Because I'm a great brother.
Yes.
And I got a whole bunch of games, and one of the games I got him was the Super Nintendo Cho Aniki, because I'm not a great brother.
Wait, there's a Super Nintendo Cho Aniki?
Okay, but it's a fighter.
Oh.
Like, shooter. Oh, like the other Cho Aniki games are shooters. This is a fighter, but it's not. Oh, I don't even know what to call it. You fly all the time, but it's a fighter. But it doesn't really have. I don't know what's that thing that all the other fighters have. Play control. Play control. It doesn't really have that. You just kind of hover around and you do special moves, and then you get tired all the time, and you're a bodybuilder and. One of the characters is a ship, and one of them is like, no, we're done. But that was the hit. That was the hit of the evening, because it's not a good game, but it's an awesome game.
That kind of reminds me of how like amazed I am that like SNK released all those games for the Super Famicom. And the Super NES, like they were U.S. localized versions of Samurai Showdown and Art of Fighting.
It wasn't actually SNK who did those ports; it was Takara.
Oh well, still, I mean, you know, the fact that they released their they had their own console that came out before the Super Famicom that they were trying to sell, and they released ports of their games for their competitor, even though they were inferior ports.
Tell you the truth, if anything, that I think that would make people want the actual hardware better, because you play that game in the arcade and you're like, wow, that's a great game. I wish I had that on my Super Nintendo. And you get it and you're like, wow, I really need a Neo Geo.
Yeah, but you still couldn't convince your parents to spend $600 on, especially for as expensive as those carts were. Well, anyway, I don't want to derail the conversation, but that just reminded me, like that and Hudson still releasing like Bonk for all those Nintendo platforms. Anyway.
Well, I think Bonk was mainly trying to... They were trying to mainly make Bonk like a... What? A mascot for...
Yeah.
For the system in America. I don't think like PC Genjin series was never as was never considered an iconic series for the system in Japan.
Okay.
PC Engine was much better known for like Tengai, some of the RPG series or whatever, or you know, really accurate ports of shooters and stuff,
right.
And known a lot more for a lot of the games that never came to America,
right?
Because of Nintendo's weird licensing.
Hmm.
You know, I don't know. I think it was never really an iconic series. I guess it was probably better known in Japan for things like Bomberman and stuff.
Right. Right. Yeah, Bomberman was a good enough mascot. Why can't they just go with that? I mean, they even released like a Bomberman multi-tap, for crying out loud.
Yeah. I don't know. But I don't know. Did Bonk come out for NEC systems in America? I don't remember. I know it did.
Game Boy?
Really?
Super Nintendo? NES?
I mean, it was those.
Don't you remember our own episode on the subject?
And I have all of them because it's amazing to see the differences in quality between like, and I just like the naming convention. It was PC Genjin on the NEC, and then it was FC Genjin on the Famicom, and it was let's see, Super Genjin on the Super Nintendo.
I just realized I'm staring at an NEC monitor right now.
Are you?
Yeah. Well, this is crazy. I have an HP monitor, an NEC monitor, and an Insignia all next to each other.
Then you chose the right one.
Oh dear. No. Right. Well, I mean, now that I'm staring at all these PCs, I'm going to jump away from the console realm for a minute.
All right.
Because I can't believe I didn't think about any of these games until just now. But did you ever play the Journeyman Project?
I was just going to say Journeyman Project.
Oh my God. I love Buried in Time so much. This is the second game in the series for those who don't know. The first one did come out for PlayStation and Saturn, I want to say.
Saturn. I think it came out for Saturn in Europe or something. I don't think it came out in the West.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Europe's the West.
You know what I mean.
Unless you're talking Eastern Europe. Anyway, but there was a console version released, and I never got to play it, and it's impossible to find. I guess I could probably find a ROM if I was really... I hate looking for ROMs, by the way. I hate it. I want to play the actual thing on the actual hardware.
Anyway, if it was a CD-based game, it would be an ISO.
Sure, okay, that too. So I could play on the actual hardware if I wanted to go that route.
There was a version on the Pippin.
Oh, that's right, there was, okay. But I've only ever played Journeyman Project Turbo for the PC. This was after Buried in Time came out.
Which was pretty slow.
It was still pretty slow. I mean, well, just think about how slow it used to be.
Advertises three times as fast, and I'm still like sitting there with the loading time, and I'm like, how did anyone play the original?
Right. Oh, that's probably the problem. I don't think anyone did. But it was actually a game that my dad got for me, and I don't know where he found a copy. I don't think it was new when I finally played it for the first time. The second game, that is. But I was just floored by it, and this is after I had played Myst already. You know,
is Project 2? Is the subtitle on that one Buried in Time?
Buried in Time, yeah. That's the second game.
Great game.
Yeah, so for those who haven't played it, the first game centers around you stopping this meds. So, like, you're in the future. You're basically, like, a guy who watches the timeline for any sorts of disruptions. And the way that this happens is that if it's, like, a time-travel incursion, it, like, propagates through time at a certain rate, which is an interesting way to look at it, because I think you'd experience changes instantaneously, if at all.
Yeah.
But you have so much time to like get to your time travel machine and like hop over it. Like the act of traveling through time, insulates you from the effects of the change. So you can figure out what went wrong and fix it. So this is so great. They have this like historical record on a disc, You know, cause it's like a CD based game. So I think they were trying to make some kind of tongue in cheek comment about CDs in general. But they like stored this like historical data record on a disc, like in the distant past, like 6 million BC or something. And so if there's ever a time incursion, you won't know what's changed unless you compare the historical record against this disc. And because you're hopping through time to you had to hop through time to plant it in the first place and then retrieve it later on. You're insulated. It's insulated against the effects of time travel, and you're able to see what changed and then go into that point in the past and fix it. So that's the entire first opening scene. There's like four different zones you can go between. So there's where you are in the distant future. There's a Martian colony. And I can't remember any of the other zones. Oh, there's like a consortium, where like Earth's being inducted into some kind of like federation, like galactic civilization type thing.
Yeah.
And there's two others that I can't recall if they were actual historical things, because Buried in Time does deal with the actual historical time periods, which I enjoyed much, much better. But that first game, which actually played second, was really interesting and a lot of fun, but the second one is what really blew my socks off.
Did you ever play the third one, Legacy of Time?
I did. It wasn't as good.
That's what a lot of people say. I never played it.
This was during those times, like it was one of the first CD-based games ever, from what they boasted. And
1992.
Yeah, right. So this is like when like Sega CD was trying to just do like full motion video with like QuickTime events and stuff. This was an actual game, which had some full motion video in it, but it was like 3D rendered backgrounds, you know, and like these robots and stuff, especially in the Martian time zone. And they would like, you know, interpose actors over like green screen, you know, not very high quality, not very high resolution, mind you, because of what the computers could do at the time. But it was a really cool effect. And, you know, most of the time you were just walking around kind of like mist, but you'd actually get to interact with objects. You didn't get to talk to people because you're trying to avoid further time incursions by running into someone you shouldn't be talking to.
Yeah.
And the second game takes that to a new level where, like, a future version of you who's being framed for a time incursion travels back into the past with this, like, new version of their time travel, like an actual self-contained unit, a suit that can cloak itself. And he gives you the suit to, like, prove your own innocence. And so you're able to, like, walk through all these levels unseen because you can stay cloaked. But for, like, certain things, you have to, like, uncloak, and that presents an element of danger because you can be seen, and if you are, then the game is over. Oh, man, it was so cool. But
I remember, yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. No, you finish.
No, I don't have anything else to add at the moment.
I remember when that game came out. Like, I should probably point out, if you haven't played it, and you should look it up. It's really cool. It was one of those photorealistic games, very much like Myst.
Yeah.
But that's probably where it ended. Like, it was a sci-fi game. And
yeah, very sci-fi.
They both came out around the same time. I don't actually know which one came out first, but a lot of people kind of linked it as like a Myst clone, but yeah. It really wasn't.
I'm pretty sure at least Journeyman Project came out first, and you know, a lot of the elements were in there. Like, there was, for some reason, anytime you like saw yourself in a mirror or whatever, it was like an actual animated, like drawn person. But if you interacted with if you saw any people, which there are only like a couple of them in the actual game, it was actual video. So that was interesting. But the thing I should mention is that the actual gameplay window is very small, partly because of the, because you have like a HUD, which is like your controls for moving around, using your inventory, and stuff like that. And you had this little tiny actual viewport, especially in the first game. It was really, really small.
It was like a third of the screen, that.
And that was just because of the technical limitations of the time, you know, even with full motion video.
Yeah.
But yeah, the second game, they made it a bit bigger. And I think by the third one, it takes up most of the screen, but...
Yeah.
That'll make it a little harder to play if you actually find a copy somewhere.
They remade the original Journeyman Project. They remade it as the Journeyman Project Pegasus Prime.
Yeah, I think that's the one that came out for consoles, though. Or at least the Saturn or the PlayStation.
Just PlayStation.
Just PlayStation? Okay.
But it was really kind of gimped on the PlayStation. Apparently, it's really good on the Pippin, and there's a Macintosh version, too. But for some reason, this is the only one that didn't come out for Windows, so no one ever really played it.
Right. And I wanted to get a copy right when I found out that it existed. But, you know, I was a kid, and I didn't have enough money, and... I don't think it existed anymore by that point, honestly. So,
it was supposed to come out for the Saturn as the Journeyman Project director's cut, but it got scrapped with the Saturn.
Okay, so it was supposed
to
come out.
This is 97. So Saturn I'm not crazy. Dying.
Right. Okay. So there was supposed to be a Saturn version.
Yes. So it was advertised in magazines and everything. But the thing, what's here? Can I share one of my video game thinks?
Sure.
It's a Vink think.
A Vink think.
So a lot of people compared the Journeyman Project unfavorably to being a missed clone.
Right.
But what happened was it was very much its own thing, and it was a very impressive and very critically acclaimed game, despite not selling nearly as well as Myst.
Right.
But actually, later on, when they started making further Myst games, the studio that made Journeyman Project, Presto Studios, actually took over the Myst franchise.
Yeah, they made like the last two or three games.
Yeah. Which is, and unfortunately, that's what kind of killed them. But
yeah, I have a copy of Myst 4 that I bought, because like Myst 4 and 5 came out like around the same time, or at least it felt like they did. And I never got 5 because I was going to play 4 first. I'd never opened my copy of 4; it's on my pile of shame. But you know, I think a big difference between Myst and this game was, especially the first two, Myst and Riven. There were like no people, like, you know, you had the books and stuff from the first game. You didn't really interact with them, you know, it was just like video you were watching. And the second game, especially, there's people you're supposed to avoid, and you could like see things unfolding in front of you. But you also had this chatty AI companion that was actually like a comedian whose name I totally forget. But he would like, you know, have commentary on the history you're seeing around you. Cause again, it was taking place in the mostly the historical past. And oh god, it was just so full of jokes, and especially the there was a castle you traveled back to, an actual historical castle, and it was just full of Monty Python references. Like there's this tower, like you're at the bottom of trying to figure out how to climb up it without being seen, and if you wait for too long, they throw a cow on you.
wait! This is in the Journeyman Project,
in Buried in Time.
Oh my gosh, I never finished Buried in Time.
Oh my! It's an amazing. Actually, you know what? The disc version, doesn't work. You can't beat the game. You had to get a patch that you got from the website. Like one of the few times I've actually had to, you know, like originally had to get a patch for any kind of game, and you have to install that in order for the game to work. So I have my discs still, but I can't finish that game unless I like bust open my old Windows 98 machine where it's still installed and grab the EXE. Yeah.
There's got to be somewhere on the internet where you can
probably, but I think you just copy the EXE. There's like no huge installation file you really need.
Well,
to make
I would
that work.
I was a Mac user, so I have the Mac version, but I bet I can't play that anymore either because it was made for like, you know, before they switched to Intel Macs.
It probably
unless I, you know, found my old iMac, I couldn't play it either. So I think what I'm really saying is Steam or good old games, right. Get on that. We'd like to play that again.
Yeah, if anyone knows of a way we can play this game now, we'd love to link it in the show notes. Maybe we'll do some research before we release the episode, but it's such a good game. Oh,
I would really like to beat it now. I think of all the games we've mentioned today, this is the one I want to go back to the most.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, I think that this is what I'm comparing all these games to subconsciously until we mentioned that it even existed. I forgot about this game entirely and I love it so much. Yeah. This doesn't do the thing I said of like, exploring the consequences of time travel or like playing with, the cause and effect thing at all, because, throughout all these games, the point is to not change time. You're trying to fix someone screwing up time. The second game especially, is that no one noticed what was happening because the person who was responsible for it, for all these temporal incursions, was really clever. They were hiding pieces of like a device that they were going to use for some nefarious purpose in the future in historical artifacts that were all being bought up at the same auction. So you actually had to go into the point in the past where the temporal incursion occurred, but it was until they realized something was happening, they couldn't really detect it under normal methods because it flew under the radar. In almost a literal fashion, because they would like, there'd be like small things, like there was like a scepter where the diamond was too perfect for what could have been created with technology at the time.
Huh.
stuff like that, like really little things. But like all together, it formed some weapon or something that they weren't really sure. But it was suspicious enough to send you, that you were being framed for having, like, that you had stolen the actual artifacts, and that's what you were being framed for.
Yeah, but from the Temporal Security Agency.
Yes,
right?
the TSA.
Yeah, the TSA. Oh God.
My.
And you had to uncover what didn't they? Didn't in the game they called them anachronisms?
Anachronisms,
right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Man, I want to play that again.
So good, but like you know, you yourself are an anachronism, and your AI companion that you have to rescue from another time zone is that's such a good story. Oh man, like if you play this game, go to that AI thing first. Because I think you can play the rest of the game, or at least parts of the rest of the game, without it. But you need them eventually. You can't get past a certain point. I just do it from the beginning, because otherwise you're going to miss a lot of the commentary and the fun times. Oh, man. But the third game ruins that whole dynamic. You get that AI companion still.
Okay.
I think. Wait. Maybe I'm wrong. It's been a while. But the thing I remember the most about it was that they sort of upgraded your suit. So you still have the time travel suit. But now it's like a chameleon suit. And you can like take on the image of a person who actually lived in that time period. So you can interact with people. And that just broke the game for me. Like the sneaking around was really, really fun. And kind of hair-raising, like a little suspenseful.
Yeah.
But when you can actually interact with people and have to talk to them, there's all this dialogue stuff, and it just didn't do it for me. and the really weird part was there were these cutscenes where you would see yourself in the third person. And they changed actors, too. Like the guy who played your character. Well, I mean, the guy from Buried in Time didn't look anything like the drawing they had in the first game already. But anyway, so they changed the guy again, and you saw him in the third person. They changed the way the TSA works, and I don't know. It was a more technically proficient game, but something about the magic just died. Mm. Anyway, wow.
Wasn't that one of the first games to be released on a DVD?
I don't think so. I know Revan had a DVD edition, because it used to be a 5-disc game, which was kind of cool because there were like 5 main areas you would go to in Riven, but I think I actually have a DVD copy of that somewhere, to be honest. But the disc switching was like part of the game experience in a way, and that was kind of cool. Yeah.
They made mention of it, like that you were. They kind of like did a clever way, at least I don't know about 3, but in the earlier ones they were like, all right, now put in some of the time disc or something.
Yeah.
I don't remember how it went exactly, but yeah, they made it seem like it was part of the game.
Oh,
they need that for iOS right now.
Right? They could totally do that.
They could do that so easily. I mean, they did Myst, they did Riven, they did Gadget.
Yeah.
You know Gadget?
No.
You should. Okay, that's another podcast entirely.
Oh, I mean, we should say that Buried in Time plays a lot like Myst.
Yeah,
there's a lot of clicking involved. It's not really a real time moving around kind of thing. Like you have to like push left, right, forward, back, that kind of thing, and then something happens and you wait for the animation to stop.
Yeah.
Although the first game just had transitions, it didn't have full on animations.
Yeah, it's kind of pre-rendered transitions, but just like D. Oh, D. I'm sad again now.
Yeah.
Did we talk about this in any of our podcasts?
I think we gave the guy a shout out, but we didn't really go into any depth.
Kenji Eno, the guy who made D and D2 and Enemy Zero and all these amazing, crazy games, Real Sound for the company Warp, which was pretty much a Sega second party, I guess. I mean, they were heavily connected with the 3DO at first, and then the M2, and then they kind of shifted their allegiance. Yeah, he passed away a few weeks back.
Unexpectedly.
What, like 42 or something?
Yeah, he was real young.
Oh, man. And I met the guy. I met the guy.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, Patch and I met him. We met him when my third Tokyo Game Show.
So 2008?
2000. Yeah, I guess. We were invited to a party for the launch of a new iPhone game called Newtonica, which Kenji Eno did the music for.
Right.
and there was a party, and he was DJing. And I've got his business card.
Oh, man.
Which is now a treasured possession. Well, it was before, too. But, right. Like, his games were always weird. And none of them ever became, like, super blockbusters, but they were always really interesting and atmospheric and fun. And, I mean, he hadn't really put out anything for a long time. He was doing some iPhone games, and he did Yumi and the Cubes for Wii Virtual Console.
Yeah.
Not Virtual Console, sorry. WiiWare.
Right.
And I never played it. It was always one of those games I was going to get to. Maybe I should pick it up now out of respect.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, Newtonica, Newtonica. I don't know if by the time this podcast comes out it still will be, but all his Newtonica series went free on the day he died.
Okay.
And as of right now, it's still free. But if it's not, you should get it anyway because it's really good.
What's that available for?
iOS.
Just iOS, okay. Oh, man. Yeah, I show my ignorance here. I heard of D, but that was about it. I never played it. Never heard of these other games, really. So
D is worth playing. Enemy Zero is an amazing story, but the actual gameplay is weird because it's all invisible enemies.
Huh.
So you're picking them up by, like, sound and stuff. And speaking of sound, he did an amazing game called Real Sound, which has no graphics.
What?
Yeah, it has no graphics.
It's all audio?
Entirely audio.
Oh, man. A game a blind person can play.
That's very, very few games that can be played. Because you play as this blind woman who hears a murder happening.
Oh.
You have to... Like, you still use the control pad. You navigate, but, like, everything's by sound. You need a good sound system to play. It sold tens and tens of copies.
Oh, that's too bad.
One of the dynamics in the game was kind of like this gardening or, like, growing aspect. So the game included stuff with the game was insane. It came with a Braille instruction manual, and it came with flowers, with, like, these flower seeds. And you were supposed to, like, grow them for... Yeah, just really... The game was... I can't remember the exact full Japanese title, but it was something Real Sound. And I bought a copy on Saturn, and I think there was a Dreamcast version as well, because, man, that game would be hard to port. but I had it for curiosity, but, like, a game that's entirely audio-based in Japanese was a little beyond my capabilities at the time.
Oh, all right, duh. It's like, I want to play this. Oh, I probably can't.
Yeah. I would sometime get to be high enough to be able to play an audio-only, no visual game. But not there quite yet.
Well, I guess now that I've thought of this... the Sands of Time, not Sands of Time, Buried in Time thing. I want to see that game or it's like again. That's what I really want. I guess the whole thing of playing with time and seeing the consequences is cool and all, but just, you know, a pretext for a little historical adventure like Doctor Who originally was, I think, is sufficiently cool.
Did you ever play any of the Doctor Who computer games?
You know, I remember seeing a screenshot for some like Apple-like or Commodore 64 game, and I didn't have whatever hardware it was on, and I could never play it.
There was Dalek Attack, which was kind of an action game. That was pretty fun. There's the game Daleks, which is available for every platform, but it's just kind of a more of a puzzle game than anything else.
Right.
And there was, Doctor Who, the Key to Time, not Key to Time, that was a real thing.
And that was the actual, that was an entire year of Doctor Who ones.
There was a CD-ROM game that was actually like John Pertwee's like last, no, like, the original master, like Anthony Ainley, it's his last recorded thing.
Oh, nice.
Like, had some of the living doctors do clips in video form. It was a first-person shooter.
What?
And it was only released in England, but a friend of mine who was a big Doctor Who fan, he got it at a convention or something. It was a fairly terrible game. But yeah, it was a first-person shooter Doctor Who game. It was called Doctor Who and the... Gosh, I have no idea. But this is before the revival happened.
Right.
This was 1996, 1997, maybe. I think it was post new Doctor Who movie, pre anything else.
Okay.
And it was a Doctor Who computer game. We were floored. No, we weren't. At the time, pretty.
Proud. There have been like flash games and stuff since then, though. I think, which I never really played, but I don't know. Those don't really count. Those aren't the kind of caliber of game I'm really talking about.
Oh, Digital, Sonic Extreme Racing or Sonic and Sega All-Stars Racing. They did a series of Doctor Who adventure games.
Oh.
They were released for free on the BBC website.
That's what I'm thinking of then.
And they, you know, there's actual audio from the actors and stuff, but I can't play them
because you are not in England and neither am I. Yep.
Now you could play them.
Why could I play them?
Because at least two of them, I'm not sure, maybe all of them now, are available for like $5 each from some direct download site.
Oh, okay.
You know, they made them available outside, but. Whereas in England they have Mac versions of all of these games as well, no one bothered to port them. I guess I could use Camp and play them, but even if I could play them and owned them, I don't know if I'd play them. So
talk about region locking, right? Like that's like 2005 hits, and the BBC isn't really caught up to the internet, and I guess there's some kind of like broadcasting, commercial licensing, whatever issue there. Yep. But like at least they're putting their trailers on YouTube now. So, whatever. Anyway.
I have a Doctor Who iPhone game that's not wonderful. But
no, it's too bad.
It's called, but it doesn't really have any time travel mechanic in it. So I think we should end with the elephant in the room, though, right?
What's that?
Most famous game ever featuring time travel. I thought that's why you were making this episode in the first place.
Oh.
No?
Hmm?
Chrono Trigger.
Yeah, Chrono Trigger. You know, I can I tell you my history with Chrono Trigger?
History with Chrono Trigger.
Was there like a PlayStation copy? What am I thinking of?
They made a PlayStation version that was like Chrono Trigger and Final Fantasy something.
Yeah, I think I have that one. Because I have... Wait, was that a Final Fantasy V it came with, or was that something else? No. It was Final Fantasy V. Well, anyway, I had a version that I was trying to play. I never really got very far. It's like I just got distracted by something else. And then didn't play it for years. And then I ended up getting a copy for Virtual Console for Wii. And started that, and then my Wii died. So every time I try and play Chrono Trigger, I can't, and I have to start all over again. It's like Groundhog Day.
Can I make a confession?
Yeah.
Same thing.
Okay. So this is why we haven't talked about it the entire time. I haven't really played the game. I hear from what I understand, there's multiple endings, and like the things that you do sort of... So I guess the game that I've wanted to play forever already exists, and I just haven't played it.
Maybe it doesn't meet all your specifications, but it's a great game. I'm about 10 hours, 8 hours into it. I don't know, something like that. Probably maybe a third. But there's this part where you have to climb this mountain.
Okay.
Also, you catch a rat. Like, I'm playing it on... Right now, I'm playing it on the iPad.
Mm.
Well, actually, the iPhone, but stretched. It's pixel art. It doesn't really matter. But I'm playing it on that. And with touch controls, it is absolutely impossible for me to do this action-based sequence.
Oh, okay.
I spent, like, 3 hours trying to catch this rat. With the D-pad, it would be really, really easy.
Right, but touch controls are touchy.
For most part, for playing this game, it's fine with the touch screen because it's a role-playing game. You know, you don't have to make any fast, you know. I mean, it's real-time battles, but at the same time, you know, that's fine. but for catching this thing where you have to do kind of exact control, and I just, so now I'm like, okay, whatever. I have it on the Nintendo DS as well. I should play it on that. But I can't bring myself to put in those 8 hours again.
Yeah.
And I'm at an impasse, which is really bad because I was enjoying it probably more than I've enjoyed any game in years. I should just suck it up and play those few hours again. But, or if anybody knows a way where I can skip the act sequences on the iOS version.
ROMs.
A patch. I don't want to jailbreak my phone, I guess, but if I could install a save that's a little past that, I'd really like to go back to playing this game.
Oh, dear.
And there's where iOS breaks down, right there. Right there, my friend.
If we could just, someone can just make a time travel game where you can time travel to the spot in the game they actually want to play, that would be great.
I decided to start playing the iOS version, and I would say, no, play it on your DS instead.
Right, you could go back in time and tell yourself, kind of like in my Dreamcast tribute where I went back in time and told my 19-year-old self to stop being a tool.
Yeah. How
you created a paradox and didn't end up happening.
So, I mean, time travel is a fairly common concept in games, I think. And some games do it well, and some games just do it so cowboys can fight dinosaurs.
Yeah.
But I would love to hear from all of you guys. What's your favorite moment of time traveling, or maybe your most disappointing, or another game that you thought was going to be based off Doctor Who, but turned out to not be?
Yeah, are there any games that we missed? Really obvious ones, like, you know, tell us what you think of Chrono Trigger, because I really want to play it. I need some convincing. I need some encouragement, especially because I'm finishing up Skyward Sword, so... you can tell us on our website, famicondojo.tv, in our show notes for the podcast episode. Actually, not sure which one this is going to end up being yet. But
that's the thing with time shifting.
Right? Yeah, we're gonna time shift this episode into the future or the distant past, episode -1. Which reminds me, I should plug another podcast, but so famicondojo.tv, our Facebook page is always a hop and play, as we always post our episodes there, so feel free to leave us a message on that as well. There's always our free iTunes storefront, and you can leave a comment about the show in general, so that's what you think. And Twitter, famicondojo, if you have something to say in 140 characters or less.
Yeah, or a link to something that we should read.
Right. Oh, hey, and you can also call us if you want to leave up to a 3-minute message, 608-492-1923, which we can and usually do play on the show.
We would actually really love to hear from you. I know you hear this every week, like, there goes Vink and Sean again.
Yeah, if only they would post their episodes on time. Well, you know what? If they invent time travel, we can just spend a weekend sometime and record every episode we could ever possibly want to do and then go back in time.
To leave a voicemail, you got to pick up the phone, and I know that's like a baby's toy.
Oh, 2 years. Hand. 2 years to see if this future comes to fruition. I want a Pepsi Perfect, darn it. You know, if Nike can't give us those soft lacing shoes, I want the Pepsi Perfect.
The soft... Nike disappointed and made me happy and then disappointed at the same time.
Mattel, I know you had that patent. Where's my hoverboard?
It doesn't even have to be safe.
It doesn't have to work on water.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I've got a pit bull.
Did you ever have those magazines, like, you know, like a Boy's Life or something, where they had those crazy ads in the back, and you can, like, make like a hovering thing out of a vacuum cleaner motor or something?
For $8.99, I thought I'd get the hovercraft. What you get is you get plans.
Yeah,
you've got a vacuum cleaner motor handy, and I didn't have one.
Yeah,
but I went to a science fair at a school that I didn't actually attend. But I went to their science fair, and someone had actually made it. And I'm like, oh man, it's really not as cool.
Yeah, I was gonna say, was it terrible?
It was. It looked like it moved about. Well, it would I could definitely out meander it. Like, I wouldn't even have to be walking. I could out meander it. Like, it moved like It moved feet and feet per minute.
Oh, goodness. Oh,
possible to steer.
Speaking of Doctor Who, I know John Pertwee drove like a hovercraft that can go like on land or water in some kind of chase sequence.
The Whomobile, just two episodes.
Darn it. Was that like during the actual series, or was that like during The Five Doctors or something? No, it was during the actual series.
Actual series.
Yeah. Oh, man. You know, if we're on the Doctor Who subject, I really hope that this is some kind of multiple Doctor crossover episode this year, because this year is the 50th anniversary of Doctor Who. And I see no sign in the actual synopses for the upcoming episodes of the season, which they started last year and went into this year.
And have you seen Tom Baker lately? He's not going to make it to 55.
Yeah.
Year anniversary.
Yeah.
Do this now.
We have all the Doctors living except for the first three.
Yeah.
There's no reason not to do it. So let's get her done.
I mean, they did the crossover with Peter Davidson a little bit, you know, that
right,
little,
right. Yeah. That Children in Need special, which no one saw except the really hardcore fans.
And then you got Paul McGann, who's just like probably been waiting by the phone going, do they remember me?
You know what's funny though? And this is why I think something's happening.
What?
He's done a new audio drama and he had a photo shoot to go with it.
Hmm.
Yeah. You don't just do that for no reason.
Well, you might want to feel important. But and then you've got Christopher Eccleston.
Yeah.
And I mean, he needs some work. Like he's like, I'm going to leave Doctor Who after a year, so I'm not typecast.
I don't think David Tennant's having that problem right now.
David, what does he do these days?
Theater mostly.
Yeah, well.
He's in a few movies like Fright Night.
Yeah, I mean, get these guys on it. Sylvester McCoy was in The Hobbit, right?
I haven't seen The Hobbit.
Neither have I, but he's in The Hobbit. Sylvester McCoy.
See,
is in the
well, he's short enough.
Well, yeah, I mean, he kind of looks like a hobbit.
That movie, he is the best part of that Fox Doctor Who movie. He is.
Oh, definitely.
Well, okay, Paul McGann was really good too, but like every moment Sylvester McCoy was on screen was just magical.
Okay, but hold on. All right. Sylvester McCoy, during the seventh Doctor, fought the Cyberman,
yeah,
a Dalek invasion,
yeah,
bombed Skaro. Just like totally
no.
Took
he didn't Skaro. Just bomb Skaro. He like took the hand of Omega and threw it into the sun.
Exactly.
And destroyed Skaro.
But he goes to Earth in the 90s, doesn't check the scanner, walks outside the TARDIS and gets gunned down. Really? Really?
Well, he was old.
That's how he goes out. You know, at least Peter Davidson did it to save, what's her name? Boobs. Perry.
Peregrine Took. No, that's not right. Periwinkle. Penelope.
Something. Yeah, Boobs, but anyway, McGee. You know, at least something noble. But the Doctor's just like, I think I'll warp right here.
But it led to this wonderful scene. No, that's not what killed him. That's not what killed him.
Oh, you're right. You're right. What killed him was
stupid Earth Doctor who didn't realize he had two hearts.
Who got lost in there? Yeah.
Yeah. Most of them would get like lost in his dreamy eyes, but this one just got lost in his arteries.
You know, I think we've lost our audience. Audience. You see the 1996 Doctor Who movie? It was on Fox.
It's the one we learned that the Doctor is half human.
If you'd like to see it,
and Eric Roberts was the master.
I don't think it's available on any home video format in this country.
Oh my gosh!
I mean both Japan and America. I'm sure if you're one of our British listeners, especially from Leeds, you know who you are if you're from Leeds.
Yes.
Then you can probably get a copy, but for everyone else, So
you did try Steven Spielberg. You did try.
So see you next week.
Yeah.
Or next
when we reformat this as the Doctor Who podcast. Oh, which reminds me, I need to plug. The PowerCast is over for those who haven't been following it. And Zach Shipley has started up the No Topic Required podcast, which is currently on episode -2, counting up to episode 1. I'm not sure if that means it's going to be an episode zero or not. We'll find out. But
get it while you can. It's going to be limited edition.
Yeah.
Limited edition foil embossed podcast.
Yes. I'll link that in the show notes as well. Oh, dear. Not the foil embossed version, just the regular version.
And good luck with that, Zach.
Yes.
So it's still gaming and stuff. It's just stuff.
Like, well, there have been three shows that have been called the Powit Cast, but they're all very different from each other. And I hosted one of them for 2 years, so before this one happened.
Well, our podcast used to be about video games before we.
Well, you know, just give it two more months, and I'll be the host. Well, I can't also call myself a host, but I'll have been doing this podcast longer than I will have the Powit Cast.
Wow.
At that point, yeah. So,
but anyway, from cool all beans. Of us to all of you,
the dojo is a paradox.
Out of time.
Oh, we didn't even mention the Telltale games. We have an entire episode about the Telltale game, so
they're great, but they're kind of linear.
Yeah, is that you're not thinking fourth dimensionally, Vink?
That's true. We've mentioned the Back to the Future games in pretty much every other episode of the podcast.
Yeah, so that's yeah, they're good. Play them.
Okay,
I had them installed. Now I can play them on my new Windows 8 machine.
I'm gonna play them on my iPad. They finally upped the frame rate. So
nice.
Yep. All right, and we are up.
Famicom Dojo.